morning. Welcome into the 9 to 10 show. This is Forensic Friday, 17th of January, brought to you by Landscaper's Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Be prepared for snow. Landscaper's Corner has rock salt and Landscaper's Choice Ice Melt. Fast acting and safe for concrete. Call them at 225-9433. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us, of course. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
And a couple of guests who are no strangers to us or our audience. Tell us what's going on today.
Well, Katie Webster is a prosecutor in our office, and she's with us this morning.
Morning, Katie. Good morning. I'll get your mic on. There we go.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, and her mother, Kathy Mattingly, is listening.
Good morning, Kathy.
That's right, in Lebanon.
Yes.
Kentucky, mm-hmm. which is a suburb of Raywick,
yeah.
I'm told. Yeah.
Gateway to Raywick.
Right. And Mary Houlihan is with us, who is a victim, is the director of our victim services in our office. And we want to talk about a case that
good morning.
Good
morning,
Mary. Thank you.
Right. Hey, Mary.
Yeah, well, punked again.
Yeah.
So what happens is there's a call on last January,
mm-hmm.
That a man was outside of a house and threatening to shoot people inside. And, of course, the police respond, and next thing you know, he's shooting at police officer Tim Ball.
Mm-hmm.
And
Didn't
hit him,
yeah.
But he shot at him, and we... You know, this fellow, Philip Resmondo, was charged, and it's really this case was very interesting because it presented a number of issues relating to the danger really that police face when they respond to a call for help from our citizens.
Is it hard if we say Mary's married to a police officer?
Well, yes.
Does this make it even more personal for you when you got...
I tell you, it absolutely did. It's not only that, I had previously in my past occupation worked with Tim Ball, who pretty closely, so, you know, I knew his wife, and that's immediately actually where my thoughts went was, how do you deal with getting that call? I mean, it's scary stuff.
Is it something that's in your mind, in the back of your mind, all the time?
To be honest, I came to police husbanding late, and my husband has been in administration since we got together, so I didn't go through that patrol experience, and in this case almost made me realize I never had that prep time of getting used to somebody that's going out on the streets, never knowing what they're responding to. And so this case really did bring up a lot for me because it kind of made me realize that there's no protection as police. You never know what you're getting into, and you never even in administration know what you're going to be called out to be in support of. And so I, you know, went through a little bit with realizing the risk in a different way with this case. And again, really imagining what it is like for those significant others and family members to get those calls that something has happened, even like in this case where the officer wasn't injured. I just don't even know how you kind of start sleeping again.
Yeah.
You know, Jack, I want to bring something. I want to just change the subject very quickly here. Brian Derman was run over and killed some time ago by a guy named Glenn Donahue. Glenn Donahue went to trial, and he was convicted of manslaughter and a number of other things, and was sentenced to 20 years by the jury and by the judge. Now, 3.8 years later, Glenn Donahue is up for parole. And so after having served 3.8 years, and Brandy Derman, the wife of Brian Derman, got a letter from the parole board, and they have a victim's event. We've talked about those before, mm-hmm. where the victim gets to go and share their thoughts mm-hmm. about the whole thing. And they told her a couple of things. Number one, they have two options. They can either parole this guy or they can defer him for only 24 months, 2 years.
Then he automatically gets paroled?
No, he probably is considered again.
Okay.
But they also said you can only have 10 people at this meeting.
Why?
Well, that's just what they said.
That's the parole board's decision?
Yeah.
Really?
And they also said you got 30 minutes to tell us everything we need to know. And so Brandy was kind of bent out of shape over this. And
I bet.
And we wondered, how can we show the support for the in opposition to this Donahue's parole eligibility? And so what Brandy has done is created a petition online. And what I want to ask people that are maybe listening here is to go to our webpage, which is called LexingtonProsecutor.com. LexingtonProsecutor.com. And once you go there, you can go to that particular spot on our webpage and sign that petition. If you agree that we would like this guy who basically has killed a police officer to serve the sentence he got. So that we thought would be a good opportunity to talk about that.
Can you present that then to the board, I guess?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah, and it went up yesterday. And so far, since yesterday, we've gotten about 2,000 signatures.
Wow, that's terrific.
So we're hoping to really make this thing happen. That's LexingtonProsecutor.com.
It's spelled funny. P-R-O-S...
P-R-O-S-E-C-U-T-O-R.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
We do a spelling lesson.
Yep.
Perfect.
I misspell it every time I try to, so it's just helping other people.
You're a verbal guy.
Right, exactly.
Right. Okay, Katie, tell us, so this case comes in, and tell us a little bit about how you go about getting this thing prepared and what were charges.
Well, he was charged with initially a criminal attempt to murder for firing at the police officer, Officer Timball, whenever he arrived. He was also charged with criminal mischief because when he shot at the police cruiser and at Officer Timball, he caused over $1,000 worth of damage to the police car. He had a shotgun, so he fired at the police car, and there was quite a bit of damage to that car. In the course of stopping him, there were two officers there that were able to disarm Mr. Resmondo and take the gun away from him, but he fought them, so he was charged with assault third for assaulting those two police officers. And he was also charged with wanton endangerment for shooting in the direction of two witnesses that were the victims in this case, Officer Timball, and there was a second officer that was there, Officer Carmichael, and he was assaulted. We met with them, and we prepared this to go to the grand jury.
Okay, now, tell us a little, Mary, you need to pick up here. Tell us about we've talked a little bit about, at least coming up on the show, we talked a little bit about that there are some mental health issues. And let's talk a little bit about that and how did we go about, because, you know, Jack, what we're looking for is justice in this thing. And we understand that this guy, this Resmondo guy, had some real issues. And one of and I talked to the father of this fellow, because he wanted something to happen, but he wanted something beneficial to his son to happen. Now, I suggested that he go and talk to a lawyer, a defense attorney, because I can't talk to him about the case because, you know, he's the father of a defendant.
Sure.
So I said, I really can't talk to you about it, but let me give you the name of a defense lawyer that is an outstanding lawyer and it fights hard for her clients, but is also looks to solve problems. That's Pam Ledgewood, and she is a well-respected lawyer, and people in our office really like to work with her. We know that she's gonna try to kick our rear ends.
She's gonna bring it, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. But she also is a really a rational person who's looking out for the best interest of her client.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to take a break. You mentioned earlier that you thought I sounded better or that I'd been sick. Well, I got a call from my friend Ryan Stanton, ER doc over in Georgetown, who does this show once a month on Wednesday. I've got a text from him. He said, "You sound awful." And I said, "I feel awful." And he said, "Well, come in. I'm in at 7 o'clock. So I went on Wednesday night, and he tested me, and I had the flu. And so he gave me a prescription for Tamiflu and some cough stuff. And today I feel like I'm going to get well, and I feel so much better." So he texted me. He said, "You know, I think on Ray's show might be a good time for a shout-out." So that's how much... how much rank you have around here. I mean, he wanted a shout out on the show where you're here. So a shout out to Dr. Ryan Stanton. Say something to Ryan there.
Well, Ryan, you did a good job keeping Jack alive and well here. But I'll tell you something. I said it before.
Yeah.
I have heard you, and you sounded like crap.
Yeah.
A few times.
Yeah.
But you play with pain, man.
I do.
That's just the way it is.
I do. I don't mind exposing all my friends.
That's perfect.
To Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson, Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Katie Webster, Victims Advocate Mary Houlihan, a case of a man who took a shot at a police officer. Good thing is he didn't hit him, but is that more serious than if he'd taken a shot at you or me?
Well, if a guy shoots at me... That's probably the most serious
well,
thing
yeah.
could happen.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Takes
but
a
I'm
shot at you, less serious.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like there is no minor surgery if it's on me.
That's right.
But seriously, is that if you shoot a police officer, it's a bigger deal than shooting a layman?
Well, the assault third is if you fight with a police officer and you injure a police officer, that will be assault third. The same injury on you or me would be assault fourth.
Okay.
So there is a protection. If you shoot and kill a police officer, then that and murder a police officer, that is eligible for the death penalty. You see, that's an aggravating circumstance. So in some instances, that's accurate.
Yeah. Okay,
right.
Jim, good morning.
Yes. The officer that got killed by the guy who hit him with the car or truck, whatever it was.
Yeah. Right.
Was it proven that he deliberately ran over the police officer?
Well, we thought we proved it. The jury deliberated for a long time. There was one person on the jury that we were told that didn't want to convict him of anything, but ultimately convicted him of manslaughter in the second degree. Now, let me tell you what the definition is, and I'll give you a little homicide lesson. There are four types of homicides in Kentucky: murder, manslaughter first degree, manslaughter second degree, and reckless homicide. And there are two elements to every homicide. One is the result, and in every homicide, the result is a death. The difference is the mental state. And with murder, it can be intentional, meaning you intended to cause somebody's death. Manslaughter in the second degree is defined as this: you perceive the risk that the way you're driving this vehicle could cause somebody serious physical injury or death. You consciously disregard that risk and do it, and somebody dies. That's what they convicted this Donahue fella of. And we believe that he aimed his vehicle at the police officer because he'd had issues with police in the past. So he was charged with murder. So we thought we proved it, but we did. The jury that ultimately makes that decision, and they okay. did. They didn't agree.
Jim, thanks. This is Joseph. Good morning, Joseph. Hello, Joseph.
Officer's behavior.
Say that again. I'm sorry, I didn't have the thing up.
I have a question here about the police officer's behavior. So I have a question for the prosecutor.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I had a car that I had bought from a lady, and she was the registered owner of. And then another guy came along saying that it was his, that she hadn't finished paying him. So he called the police. When we got there, there was two police officers. There was an African-American police officer, and then there was a white police officer. After hearing the facts involved in the case here, the black police officer said, well, this is a civil matter, and we have nothing to do with it. So I decided I was going to go into the house and call this girl, Angela, and the white police officer, he said, well, I'm going in with you. I said, you're not coming in here because this is a civil matter which you have nothing to do with. And I went into my house, and he followed me in there. And then the black police officer came in behind him. But I felt violated because I know it's a civil matter which he has nothing to do with. And I was so angry. I don't own a gun, but if I had one, I could have got my hands on it. I probably would have shot his damn face off.
Wow.
For invading my home. You have some cops out there who's just renegades. They're arrogant, and they think they're above the law, and they think they can treat people any kind of way.
All right, I'm going to let you listen to the response off the air, Ray. We're going to take a break, and we will be right back. 253-5959. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us, Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Katie Webster, Victims Advocate Mary Houlihan, and Ray, any comment on the question before the break?
Well, it is against the law to sell mortgaged property or property that has a lien on it and that sort of thing. And so that, you know, that situation that the caller described may not been completely a civil matter. But, you know, police are called to a lot of different kind of situations, and sometimes the people turn on them.
Right.
And remember the other week when we talked about the domestic violence thing? Somebody calls begging for help, that somebody's being beat up, and they come in there, and the police officer grabs the guy, assuming he was the one that was doing the beating. And next thing you know, the woman and the guy are fighting with the policeman. So it's, there are situations when they're not the most popular guy on the...
I'm guessing they have to sort of assess their own risk at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy just admitted that if I had a gun, I'd have shot him. So there must have been some... That assessment of some risk must have been real.
I don't... You just don't know.
Well, and what it shows you is that there's people out there that would think that that situation was best to deal with by shooting someone in the face,
yeah.
Which to me seems a little bit like a stretch, but shows you instead what the police officers are facing. I'm
exactly.
not trying to defend whether or not they did anything beyond somebody's civil rights, but if they did, talk to an attorney. Don't shoot them in the face.
Right, right, exactly. Okay.
Oh, let's get back to this. So the father came in, Mary, and you've talked with him for a bit, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the father was involved in this incident, and what it shows you is, you know, families are dealing with children and family members that have mental health issues, and there's not all these magical services in place that make that an easy road to hoe, and you're trying to get your child into adulthood to where they're making better choices, but taking into consideration their mental state. And there's just a lot of difficulty getting support for all the right things out there. So basically what happens is families get involved in situations that, while they started as a family issue, end up involving great risk and a call to 911. This father was also believed to be at risk and was initially part of a charge of wanton endangerment himself for the fact that the son brought the gun to address the father, not the police initially. But that puts a parent in a very difficult situation. They're the victim, and the perpetrator is their family, is their most beloved family, their child. And so we started working with him, and, you know, you did give him some advice about talking to a to an attorney for his son as well, which I thought was very fair because, you know, Ray has a bit of a reputation and it's not necessarily for taking into consideration the defendant's situation. But the reality is he actually does in a great deal of great many cases, and this is certainly one of those. Because if the situation had been handled differently and without a defense attorney that was willing to work with us on getting a plea result that took into consideration these mental health issues, but also the seriousness of the crime, this case could have resulted in somebody being released on bond. That was still a great risk to the community and even to his family. But instead, he was held during this the proceedings to resolve the case. And I believe that the guilty plea took both sides of the situation into consideration. The fact that there were mental health issues that this family was dealing with, but also great risk and also an action that could have resulted in the death of police officers that were just responding to help.
Okay, so talk to me a little bit about, he's represented.
Yes.
And so how do we go about trying to figure out the best result that respects police officers and the threats that they face, as well as taking into consideration the real live mental health issues that the defendant faced? And how do we resolve that thing to the what we think is the benefit of the community?
Well, as Mary said, in this case, we worked very closely with the defense attorney, and we had many meetings with the police officers that were involved. We had meetings with the family of the defendant, and we spoke with the other victim, who was a sanitation worker who was just an innocent man who happened to be on the scene. So we spoke with everyone and got a feeling for this defendant's mental health issues and how we felt that we could best represent or come to the best resolution for the family, for the victims, and for the community. And he wound up pleading guilty eventually, but mentally ill.
Now so what was the recommendation?
The recommendation was to, he would plead to criminal attempt to manslaughter first degree. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest charge. And that was a 7-year recommendation. He also pled guilty to 1 year for each of the assaults on the police officers. And he pled guilty to 1 year on the wanton endangerment of the innocent sanitation worker who happened to be nearby. They were ran consecutively, so he would serve 10 years.
Okay, now Jack, Katie raises another charge, manslaughter first degree.
Mm-hmm.
Manslaughter first degree, remember we got a death, and we have, when we're talking about homicides, mm-hmm. we got a death and we have a mental state. The mental state for manslaughter first degree is you intentionally caused a person's death, but at that time you were operating under what they call an extreme emotional disturbance. Sudden heat of passion is another way of describing it. So it was, he pled guilty to, what was the attempted?
Yes, attempted manslaughter in the first degree.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have the death in this thing, but we had the mental state, and he pled guilty to guilty but mentally ill is the charge. But Mary?
And I think a really important part of this agreement was that the a situation that could have been, the guilty plea was resolved in such a way that probation wasn't an option at the time of sentencing. That is not to say that there won't be all sorts of ways that the defendant can be considered for release earlier than that 7 years. And in fact, he's eligible for parole after serving only 20% of that, just so that, you know, you understand that the difference is taking into consideration getting him help while he's incarcerated, but having a release opportunity if his situation merits it.
Now, does he automatically qualify during his time, because you've established the fact that he's got mental issues, for any kind of treatment while he's incarcerated?
Well, that's part of the statute, is that they're supposed to provide those mental health help.
Yeah.
While he's incarcerated.
Okay, let's take a break. And Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us, Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Katie Webster, Victims Advocate Mary Houlihan. And we were kind of having an off-the-cuff discussion in the break about how you're kind of notorious for not having a whole lot of interest in the rights of the bad guys. But you seemed like you were a little more interested in this guy.
No, basically, I was off the air. You accused me of being kind of wimping
out on this.
Kind of
wimping
thing.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, here's the deal. First, nobody was hit by any of the shots. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, how can we resolve this thing? You got to recognize the fact that this guy had mental issues, and that was basically the cause of the whole incident. The father came in, and he was bothered by what was going on with his son.
Sure.
Like everybody.
Right.
My interest was, okay, you don't shoot at a policeman. That's number one. You don't shoot at anybody, but you also don't particularly shoot at a policeman who's just showing up there. So I got to deal with that issue. The other thing is, this guy has to be responsible for his behavior. And
regardless of his mental issues?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, unless this guy is insane, then that's a different issue. But this guy wasn't insane. But he had to be responsible for his behavior so that not everybody feels free to take a shot at the police, for crying out loud, or anybody else. So we worked hard on this thing and came up with a resolution that I think respected the idea that this guy's responsible for his behavior. You don't shoot at a police officer or anybody else. And he's suffering consequences. He's in custody and under the law should be receiving mental health help.
Okay.
So I think it was a good resolution. And you know, Jack, I am really nothing but a wimp anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's an email. It says, police, canines, and horses are also officers. Some laws pertaining to human officers apply to the injury and or death by a citizen of dogs and horses. Is that right? If they're police?
Yeah, but it's not to the extent that, to some extent.
Okay.
But it's not completely. You know, remember when the horse was hit?
Right.
Yeah, well.
What's happened in that situation?
We're
working on it?
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we're going to work on it some today.
You told me one time off the air that you mistreat an animal, watch out, because the jury's going to totally unsympathetic to you.
Good Lord, if you have a homicide involving cruelty to animals, let me tell you something. The jury will just hammer that person. Primarily, not because you killed somebody, but because you hurt an animal.
Yeah. Okay.
Jack, there was some sort of a torture of an animal some time ago. I got communications from all over this country about how I better not be a weenie on this case, by God.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was, it was kind of a threat.
So anyway, this guy that we're talking about today is going to serve how long?
He got 10 years. He's eligible for parole after serving 20% of that, which would be 2 years.
2 years.
The question is, has his mental issue been dealt with? And Katie, what's the thought process on this? You said that he had some issues, but that some of them were birth related and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm, that's correct. And the goal here was that there is one specific prison system that really deals with people who have mental issues. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he is in that system and he is doing well and he's getting the treatment that he needs. But he has been in custody since this occurred, since January of 2013. So he's been in for a year now.
Mm-hmm. We've got 2 or 3 minutes left. You may not be able to comment on this. So if you can't, I'll be talking for the next 2 or 3 minutes. or Mary and I'll talk about some. Richie Farmer going to be officially sentenced on Friday, I believe. He asked that instead of serving whatever 27 months, he would prefer to serve 22 months. If I had been Richie Farmer, I would have asked to have served maybe a day and a half.
Right.
If you have a choice, why would I, if I was in his, or if an average Joe was in his situation, is it common that someone who breaks the law says, I don't believe I want to serve that much. I'd like to recommend that you, that didn't set well with me. Is that normal? And that the second part of the question is, now he's also asking to serve near his hometown. Now, would I also have that privilege of saying, I don't believe I want to serve there. Can I serve over
here? You got the absolute privilege to ask anything you want.
But it's up to the judge.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's not, is that out of the ordinary? Do people do that on a regular basis, routinely?
You mean when it's time for sentencing?
Yeah.
Do they get up there and whine in front of the judge? That's not absolutely normal.
Is every single time.
Really?
Some version of what they can possibly do instead of going to serve. But I thought I heard on that case, because that was federal, so talking about something I know nothing about. But that the judge, that what he had pled to was the 22 months, the judge is the one that said service time, move service time up.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a good response to something. Whatever he did.
So the judge listened, but the judge sentenced him to the 27.
And so he's saying, wait, reconsider, look at, I said 22, but I hope that the judge holds fast with whatever he said, because exactly the wrong message for the public. Your reaction is what the public should be thinking.
Oh, I've heard that all this week. I've heard that all this week, and I don't know that we should make it convenient for Richie.
Or anyone else.
To be near his family if, you know... I guess we'll have to wait until today to find that out. Right?
I've had murder cases where the murderer asks for that sort of thing. That really makes a family happy to know that they
that you've accommodated.
By.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Stand by. We have an update from ABC. If you're listening to WVLK AM, stay with us for Live with Lee. If you're listening to 101.5 FM, it's the Coach's Show with Joe B. and Danny. Have a great weekend. I'll be back Monday morning at 6, 5, 7.
John Batchelor.